Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world. Even though it can sometimes seem that there are toxic chemicals all around us, there are many, many things that we can do to live in a less toxic way that is healthier for us. There are many organic and natural products. We can remove toxic chemicals from our bodies. There's so much that's known now about how to live in a toxic free way. It's just a matter of learning about it. And that's what this show is about, to introduce you to some new ideas that you can use in order to live toxic free. It's Thursday, July 11th, 2013, and I'm here in Clearwater, Florida, and it's overcast, so there may be some thunder and lightning, but we'll see. We're in thunderstorm season now, and anything can happen. But if we get cut off, just hold on, because I'll be right back with some backup power. Today we're going to talk about tea, and beyond that, we're going to talk about organic tea. And my guest today is Chris Olson. He is the Director of Marketing and Product Development for Teatulia. And Teatulia is unique because they have a beautiful selection of organic single garden teas. Now, what's that, a single garden tea? We're going to find out from Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well this morning. The sun's out here in Colorado, so I'm sorry to hear about the rain in Florida.
Oh, it's okay, because we need rain, and this is just the, you know, it's the summer pattern. I'm used to it. I get wet every day. So tell us, how did Teatulia start? Who started it? How long has it been around? What was the idea behind it?
Yeah, well, there's some brothers that live in Bangladesh that in 2001, with their father, they actually started the garden or planted the garden. You know, it's 100 miles south of Darjeeling, and it's right on the border of Bangladesh and India. So as that grew, you know, they created as a social enterprise basically to create jobs, but they realized the tea tasted really, really good. People really loved it. So they hit a point where they decided that they wanted to create their own brand and introduce it to either Europe or the U.S. and Canada. So one of the brothers in Bangladesh, his name is Anis, he was friends with the CEO of Teatulia, who's Adam. They met in college in New York years ago. So he happened to be out for a work trip staying with Adam and Linda. And he basically asked Linda if she wanted to help consult on a tea company that he wanted to launch in the United States. So she did. And she found out that there was a great opportunity here and a huge point of differentiation. So she decided that she wanted to be a part of the business. So the brand launched very small farmers markets in about 2006, mm-hmm. and then it was accepted into Whole Foods in 2009, and now, just as of last month, we are on the shelves of Target nationally.
Wow.
Which is pretty exciting. So, yeah, so we're definitely growing. Our message is resonating, it seems to be, at least with a lot of the retail buyers and consumers as well. So that's pretty much the history of Teatulia and how it started.
That's great. So I think that probably most people don't know much about just how tea is grown in general. So you refer to it as a garden rather than a farm or a ranch. Is all tea grown in gardens?
Well, you know, the term is more marketing than anything. Other common terms are single estate or single source. We're just playing with garden, single garden, because the whole garden to table trend, which is extremely popular here in Colorado and the Pacific Northwest, that seems to really resonate with people a little more than single source. A lot of coffee companies, you know, they talk about direct to source, single source. So, I don't know, we just kind of like the feelings that the word garden evokes in people. So, we've been using that. But traditionally, the tea plant, it's a tree, and they trim it down, and it's like plantation grown, you know, in
mm-hmm.
rows.
Mm-hmm.
And it can mm-hmm. either be grown under the shade, or it can be grown in the sun. It just depends what style, what region, what variety. But there's not really, we have one of the world's largest organic gardens. It's at 2,000 acres and we can keep adding to it because where they decided to create this garden was in an area where there's a lot of room, a lot of space
mm-hmm.
to do this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's how we have the ability to be a premium brand or a large brand and have single source. Other companies don't. They have to source from different gardens and they blend it together in order to have enough, I guess, inventory to fulfill
yeah.
demand.
So I would presume that one of the benefits of having a single source tea is that you could know what's going on with how it's grown and where it's grown and not be wondering that. And I know when I lived in California, I could go, I belong to what's called the CSA, Community Supported Agriculture, and I could go to the farm where my food was being grown. I could talk to the farmer. I could harvest the food myself if I wanted to. I could plant seedlings, whatever level of participation I wanted, but I could actually really know and how my food was being grown. And I think that would be the case here with having your single source organic teas that I see, like in the description on your homepage, it says the soil is developed with the use of organic cover crops and mulching, and the growing area is irrigated by rainwater. That's just sounds so lovely to me to know that the tea is being watered by the rain and not by industrial water that may have all kinds of chlorine and fluoride and all kinds of other things in it. So that would be, I'm presuming, the advantage of having a single source tea. Any others?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one of them. I think we could add to that, you know, just the purity of the flavor. It's single source. It's like a single estate wine compared to a blend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it tastes better, usually. You know, obviously taste is subjective, but that's what we think here. One of the big things, too, is the overall global footprint. For other tea brands, larger tea brands that do blends, you know, they go to tea auctions, and then they purchase tea. So it's like shipped around from warehouse to warehouse to warehouse until it's finally blended and put into a tea bag. Where with ours, it's direct. You know, we order it or, you know, from the garden, we have processes in place, and it comes right to where we need to get it packed, and then it goes right to the consumer. So it's a lower overall, you know, global footprint for sure. We're utilizing way fewer resources. It's also fresher than
mm-hmm.
a lot of the other teas out there because, you know, as it's sold from different tea market to market and moved around, you know, some tea can be a year to a year and a half to even, you know, older by the time it reaches your cup. Where, you know, most of our teas, it depends where you're at, you know, velocities of things selling, but it's fresh, you know, 6 months, 4 months, it could even be, you know, 3 months or so. So I would definitely add those two components to just having, well, and the accountability, like you mentioned. Yes, people, you know, we can document, you know, what we're doing in the garden. We can show videos. We can kind of make that connection. You know, we're organic, we're Rainforest Alliance, we're kosher, we're direct trade, you know. So we can prove, you know, all the money that's coming in and that we're giving back to help these people. And we can show pictures and tell the stories, which we'll get into this later in the show, of just the impact that it's actually having there. So,
yeah. I think, you know, I just have this sense as I'm looking at your website. It's teatulia.com, T-E-A-T-U-L-I-A. And you can also find it on my website at debraslist.com. You do have pictures and we can look and see, and it's like I'm seeing this hand harvesting the tea leaves, and it's like my own hand pulling the leaves off of an herb in my garden, my very own garden. So I really make the connection between your garden and my garden. And we need to take a break, but we'll be back. I'm Deborah Lynn Gadd. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio, and I'm talking with Chris Olson from Teatulia. And when we come back, we'll talk about what are the pesticides and things that are used in ordinary teas. So stay with us. You're listening to Talks Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Chris Olson from Tetulia. So, Chris, tell us something about how teas are ordinarily grown.
Ordinarily grown. Well, most teas out there are not organic. So, obviously, they're using pesticides in the growing process, you know, to keep infestations at bay. You know, tea gardens are large, you know, what that kind of does to the land. You don't really see many bugs. You don't see animals or birds. You know, I like to equate it a little bit to kind of just like this barren wasteland. I mean, sure, the plants look good, but there's really nothing else kind of going on. So traditionally, well, not traditionally, but recently, that's how most tea out there has been grown. So a lot of the really big brands that you'll find at the big box retailers are more than likely not organic. So,
yes. And
yeah.
Are there any other toxic exposures that people might get from tea? Like, tea bags, or bleach from tea bags, or anything like that?
Well, it depends. I mean, yeah, there's lots of different packaging out there. For tea bags, we have two different formats. One, we use a pyramid tea bag, which is also called Fuso. And it allows one to brew a whole leaf, like have the whole leaf tea brewing taste and experience with the convenience of a tea bag. The only other option you have in that regard is brewing it loose. But people consider that to be a little messy. So the tea bags that we use, it's corn-based, so it's fully compostable. But there's some other brands out there that use plastic instead of this corn silk material we use. So obviously when you're brewing tea at, you know, temperatures in the hundreds of degrees and it's plastic, it can definitely seep toxins. So I would say you definitely want to be aware of, you know, the larger pyramid tea bags. As far as the, they call them pillow packs, and these are the ones you would find in like a Lipton or a Celestial Seasonings. It's the paper bag. I would definitely recommend doing unbleached just because the paper's not treated. There's less toxins in the paper as well. But, you know, the best to remove all toxins is really just to brew it loose, which is the way that tea was meant to be brewed. But other than that, I would say no. I mean, a lot of it, I guess, does depend on the water and how they irrigate things and what could be in the water and how that gets into the tea. Where, as you mentioned earlier, you know, we use rainwater and whatnot, so it's purer and cleaner. But I would say that's pretty much all of the toxins that you can get into, really. So,
I brew my tea. I drink a lot of tea. I drink tea every day. I'm not particularly a coffee drinker. I will occasionally drink coffee, but I drink tea every day. I usually drink green tea, big fan of green tea, and because it gives me a little bit of perk, but it's not... doesn't have a lot of caffeine in it, and I like the flavor of it, and I usually mix it with some other types of tea just so that I have a variety of flavors. And like today I'm mixing my green tea with mint, and a few weeks ago I was mixing it with a tea that had a lot of citrus in it. And but I always brew it just loose. And my favorite way to do it is I have a French press coffee maker. I don't know if everybody knows what that is. It's a glass beaker, and then it has a plunger on top, and it presses a little screen down so the water goes through, but then usually that would be the coffee grinds would be at the bottom. But I use it for tea, and so my tea goes to the bottom, and the rest of it stays in the top, and it works better than anything I've ever used. I think it's brilliant. I think it's a brilliant piece of food preparation item, but to use it for tea, I think, is perfect. So
yeah, that's a pretty popular method for sure. You know, we sell to a lot of restaurants, and a lot of restaurants prefer to serve it in a French press as opposed to a teacup. You know,
really?
Traditionally,
I didn't know that.
Everything you've seen about tea, it's been, you know, teacups It's been, you know, and that's just, I think a lot of people, especially in this country, are, you know, some people love it and they love that old aspect of it, but a lot of people are just brewing it differently and using different means to brew it as well. I've seen people brew it through coffee makers in order to get their fix, like fine restaurants, and it tastes amazing. You know, so, and I've seen people pack it into their own handmade like tea bags and stuff too. You know, so it's cool. It's pretty amazing all the different methods of brewing tea and how people really, as we say, geek out over it. So
the most unusual one I saw was in a restaurant recently where, it had a container that the loose tea went in and the hot water. And then after it was brewed, they said, they brought it to me and they said, now this needs to steep for 3 minutes and we'll come back and tell you in 3 minutes. And so they came back and then what I was supposed to do as the customer is to like squeeze a little handle and then the tea comes out the bottom. Yeah. And I ordered it with it as iced tea. So they brought me a glass of ice and then I squeezed the handle and the tea came out the bottom of the tea thing into the ice, and it was a perfect glass of iced tea. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah,
but there are a lot of ways.
There are. You bring up a really good point, though. I mean, a very important note in brewing tea, and I think just in this country as tea is slowly emerging and becoming more and more popular, is one of the problems, and everybody's probably seen this or have done it themselves. I mean, I'm certainly guilty of this before I, you know, joined Teatulia. But I would throw my tea bag into the cup, I would put hot water, and I would brew it, and I would just leave the tea bag in.
Uh-huh.
And that is the absolute worst mistake you can make if you're, you know, drinking tea. Because when you oversteep tea, that's when it gets really bitter. That's when it gets really astringent and doesn't taste good. So that's when people are throwing milk and sugar and stuff into it to sweeten it. And, you know, I mean, sugar tastes good, but it's not necessarily the most healthiest thing for you when you're, you know, pumping a couple packets of that, you know. So there's proper ways to brew tea. And so just it's important to be very cognizant of that. You know, 3 minutes, I mean, that's good that they said that. Have a tea timer or whatever just to make sure you brew it correctly so it tastes really good.
That's a very good point, and we'll talk more about that after the break. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest is Chris Olson from Teatulia, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and we're here today with Chris Olson from Teatulia. Chris, I'm looking on the Teatulia website, and there's a whole page that talks about how your growing practices are more organic than organic, and that you practice natural farming practices. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is just like using natural rainwater. I always have trouble in pronouncing his name. It's
Masanobu Fukuoka.
Yes, I don't know why, just my tongue doesn't go that way. But we really pull a lot from his teachings. And basically that's do nothing gardening.
Yes.
You know, you just kind of let it come about, and this is like the natural kind of wild way of farming. We pull a lot from that. At first, you know, we were 100%, but obviously we need to weed a little bit. You know, we kind of have to maximize, you know, growing potential and stuff too. So, you know, if we have a dry season, you know, sometimes we kind of have to help out a little bit so we can ensure that we still have some tea. But, you know, we're not using irrigations. We're not using sprinkler systems for water. You know, all the water we are using that we might have to pump over is rainwater that we've collected. You know, so that's essentially, you know, better than organic. It's perfect for, you know, the environment. We're actually in the process of closing the loop, so using like a biodiesel factory for how we're, you know, processing the tea. And when I say processing, we're not changing the chemical compound. It's drying the tea. You know, that's how you get, you know, white to black. So we're in the process, and I think early to mid next year is when we plan to totally close that loop. But also the social side of things, you know, we're not just an organic tea, but we're a direct trade type of a tea. We're not certified because the certification doesn't exist in Bangladesh because, you know, Bangladesh is one of the poorest countries. I think it's rated the second poorest country in the world, and we're kind of in the armpit of the armpit, so to speak. You know, so we have a really strong mission on the social side of things. Traditionally, when the British came in and started growing and cultivating tea, they went up to India, and they essentially would kidnap low-caste females from India, plop them down in Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, other parts of India, and it was like indentured servitude. They wouldn't pay them any money that they could spend outside of the plantation because, you know, the plantation would have a general store, a bar, whatever, so that's where they would go to get their essentials. They wouldn't educate them. They wouldn't give them shoes. So I've actually visited some of these guards, you know, that have been around for 150, 200 years, and it's a depressing place. I mean, just the energy is just sucked out, and, you know, the people aren't happy. Where we're trying to make a difference, we created this garden to create jobs. We have a literacy program where every Thursday, you know, the tea pluckers and members of their family, but only women, because we really are trying to support females here, they go and they learn to read and write. And it's kind of a cool story, but when we went to visit them, me being the marketing director, you know, we had this entourage of photographers and videographers, and, you know, I had this idea, let's interview some of these ladies, just, you know, it'll be great content, you know, on YouTube, typical American thinking. The first lady we interview, we have a translator, but, you know, I ask, how do you feel about the literacy program? And her response was, I just learned how to count, and I realized the men at the bazaar have been robbing me my entire life, and now that's not going to happen. She was 33 years old. I mean, our jaws just dropped, and it really put it into perspective what we're doing over there. It was quite amazing. So, and then we also have this, if you know microlending, it's an evolution of microlending. It's our cattle lending program that we do over there. And that's just to create jobs and to create, you know, not limited wealth, but wealth for a lot of the Bangladeshi people around there. And that's successful. Now we're 10 years into it. And, you know, a lot of their kids are still in school. One family, their kids are in the university. So, you know, I can go on and on, but these are things that we consider more than just organic.
Yes, it definitely is. And I can really see from all the things that you're doing that you're really considering this tea as part of not only the ecosystem, but the social system of the place. And part of natural farming is to leave the ecosystem intact and include protecting the wildlife and all of those kinds of things so that there's an ecosystem there and it's not just clearing the land and planting the crop. And I think it's really beautiful the way your company has integrated everything. And all of that is, I think, essentially there in a cup of tea. When you drink it, it's like it's all there that you can see all that goodness. It's just, I mean, for me at least, I think about where everything comes from and the effects of everything. And so that is so present in what you're doing. You mentioned... Yeah, isn't that wonderful?
it absolutely is. You know, one other important note, just so I don't forget,
sure.
But I wanted to kind of just talk about organic and non-organic tea really quick if I have some time.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so one thing that we noticed when we were out there, I mean, you never really hear about this in the media. I haven't, but when we visited the non-organic tea, we learned their growing process. So the leaves are plucked basically every 8 to 10 days. It depends on the rains and, you know. But after the leaves are plucked, they spray it with a pesticide that in Bangladesh, at this particular garden, it had an LD of 5. LD stands for lethal dose. And I was told that 10 is harmful to a human. I don't know in what parts or whatnot, but that's what I was told. So they spray the plant again right before plucking with the same level of LD. And then they pluck the leaf, and it goes right into processing. It's cut up, and it's put into a tea bag. So the first time the leaves are rinsed of the pesticides is when you infuse it in your cup.
Oh, my God.
It's disgusting. It shocked us. You know, they never
rinsed the leaves. I had no idea.
Before. So it's really important, and it's great to hear. We were at a function a couple of weeks ago, and we heard the CEO of Honest Tea, and he's talking about that now. And that makes us feel good because, you know, obviously Coke bought them. And so, but it's been kind of hush-hush, I think, within the industry. But it's a scary thing. I will never drink non-organic tea. I mean, with coffee, it's kind of okay because the health benefits, you know, they spray a cherry and the coffee bean comes out, so it doesn't affect your body as literally. The same thing with fruit. You can peel fruit. But with tea, you have no option at all. You know, the pesticides come right out in the cup. So I definitely want to just, you know, bring that point up because it's quite shocking for a lot of people.
I'm so glad that you did because I didn't know about that. Wow. Well, you're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Gadd. My guest is Chris Olson from Tetulia. And we'll be back in a moment and find out more about organic tea. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Gadd. And my guest today is Chris Olson from Tetulia. And Chris, I'm still thinking about what you just said about how non-organic tea is sprayed with pesticides right before it's picked. It just made me, you know, there's so much tea available. Some of it, or most of the tea that I buy at the natural food store, although I'm going to start ordering from you directly.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah. No, but a lot of it's organic at the natural food store, but also, you know, there's these tea stores now at the mall, and they have all these different flavors, and you know, they're not always organic. In fact, most of them aren't organic, but they're so appealing, you know. And now I'm thinking, no, I need to be, if I want it to taste like mint, I think I need to grow mint in my backyard and put it in my green tea. It's just, you've just like reorganized my thinking about tea because that's horrible what they're doing.
Usually not, the case.
So. Not something I want to drink. So tell us about, we just have just this last segment left. So tell us about the difference between black, green, and white tea.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's quite interesting because a lot of people think that they're just totally different teas or plants. But they're not. They all come from the same plant. So if you're called a tea or considered a tea, you come from the Camellia sinensis plant. And the difference between white and green and black and oolongs and pu'erh's, these are all types of tea, it's all in the processing. So when they pluck a leaf, for white tea, it's minimally processed. Usually it's like the white bud. That's why they call it white tea. It has the white hairs on it. It's before the leaf unfurls. So usually they just pluck that, they throw it out to let it sun dry, and then that's essentially what you're drinking. Studies that have come out is that white teas, you know, contain the highest level of antioxidants and the least amount of caffeine. For green tea, it's processed a little differently, and there's two different ways. In the Asian, well, I guess Bangladesh is in Asia, but the Chinese, Japanese way is it's plucked, it's oxidized a little bit longer or set out in the sun a little bit longer, and then they pan fry it, and that's where you get the toasty taste. They pan fry it just to break the rest of the membranes so it doesn't start to ferment or go bad.
Mm-hmm.
We steam on the other side of the Himalayas or the Himalayas. Typically, it's a steaming process where we steam it to, you know, dry out the rest of it. So there'll be the steaming has a little more of a grassy, earthy taste, and the pan fried's a little more toasty. Then for black tea, it's fully oxidized. That's where it's set out in the sun, you know, for maybe a day, two, or three. Just depends on weather conditions and whatnot. And that's considered to have a high level of antioxidants as well. And then the highest amount of caffeine. But one important note is most Americans tend to classify caffeine as all being the same thing, and it's not. You know, caffeine, there's a lot of depending factors here. You know, how does your body absorb it? You know, some people can drink coffee before they go to bed. Other people can't. Same thing with tea. I can't really drink green tea because it gets me more wired than coffee, but I can drink black tea all day long and be fine. So when
really?
I say like high levels of caffeine, low levels of caffeine, you know, what does that really mean? You know, it's because caffeine's different. The caffeine that's in coffee is different than the caffeine in tea. It's different than the caffeine in chocolate. So I always find it fascinating when we in this country try to clump the caffeine conversation into this is exactly how it is and it's black and white. But
I thought it was all exactly the same caffeine. I really did. This is the first I've heard of this. Wow, I'm going to research that some more.
Yeah, I mean, in chocolate, it's theobromine, and I can get really technical here, but in tea, it's theophylline. I forget, I think it's the coca, I forget what the actual Latin term is for the coffee bean. But yeah, and it's all different types, and your body absorbs it differently, and it's quite fascinating once you start reading up on it, so.
Well, I'm certainly going to do that because occasionally, I mean, I don't want to be drinking, you know, lots of caffeine all day long, but, you know, it's nice to have a little, I don't want as much as in coffee, but I'll have a little piece of chocolate or I'll have a cup of green tea, and I had no idea that there was any difference, and probably the caffeine in Coca-Cola is something different altogether.
Yes, and Red Bull, it has that taurine.
Industrialized caffeine.
Yeah, yerba mate, it has matine in it. And then you have like the coca plants and, you know, that they do cocaine and stuff like that from, and that has its own type of stuff. So yeah, it's quite interesting and fascinating. That's the primary differences between tea. You also have herbs.
And yes, tell us about
that. The correct term is a herbal tisane or an herbal infusion, but it gets a little confusing here just as tea is reemerging. So a lot of people call it herbal tea. But though that, like a chamomile does not come from the Camellia sinensis plant, so therefore it's not a tea. Chamomile is a flower, so we consider that an herbal tisane. Rooibos or a yerba mate, those are also considered herbals. Even though with mate there's caffeine in it, it doesn't come from the Camellia sinensis tea plant, so it's considered an herb.
Uh-huh.
So, and there's thousands of different types of herbs out there. Obviously as well. You know, some of my favorites are mate and the rooibos, the hibiscus.
I like those too. So tell us, are there health benefits to tea?
Yes, there are health benefits of tea, but we have to be a little careful because the FDA these days is really cracking down on certain health claims. So I guess my answer to that would just be, yes, you know, get online and kind of research what kind of benefits you're looking for, and you'll find all the information that you probably want to make an educated decision online. But, yes, I mean, tea is a healthy alternative to, you know, drinking sodas, drinking a liquor or whatever every time, you know, and everybody's different, you know, it could be healthier than coffee for some people. It just, you know, it depends on how your body absorbs things and whatnot. But yes, in a lot of studies, and we haven't had our tea studied, just to preface that, but in other teas in other regions of the world, it's found to have really high levels of antioxidants, high levels of other nutrients like L-theanine, magnesium, you know, things like that. So, yes, tea is definitely healthy. And that's one of the reasons I kind of got into tea is I used to be a big soda drinker, you know, being a typical dude from Colorado. And, I hit a certain age and metabolisms change and I realized, hey, I don't feel as good as I did when I was 22 drinking a Mountain Dew every day. So that's kind of how I migrated over to tea. And feels good to preach the word of, you know, and helping people just kind of migrate over to tea and you know, just try to enhance their healthy eating habits. So,
well, one of the things that I like about tea is that, first of all, I think that it's really important for people to drink water, but I think that tea is like a good step, like the closest thing to water that has flavor. Because it's mostly, you know, herbal kinds of things. It's plants and the benefits of those plants are getting into the water and you're drinking them so that there's flavor. But there's also, as you mentioned, the minerals and things that could be enhancing the water. And it gives me a little flavor without giving anything well, as long as it's organic, without giving anything that's negative that I can identify. And it's just, it's so pleasant. And also I was thinking, I hadn't thought about this until you actually, we started the interview, but there's the whole thing about the tea ceremony, the Japanese tea ceremony, such a beautiful thing of the whole ritual of making tea and putting attention on the drinking of tea and the beauty of tea. And I think about that when I'm drinking tea, that it just has so many positive things associated with it. And you can do things like, make hot tea, make iced tea, add a little fruit juice. You don't have to necessarily put white sugar in it. It's great with honey. It's great with any of the natural sweeteners. There's so many infinite varieties of things that you can do with tea. It's pretty amazing. And so it is a great alternative to soda. It really is.
It's just great. You can create your own blends and your own flavors. And, you know, I mean, that's kind of what I do here is I handle the new product development. And it's a blast because, you know, you're just mixing things together and trying it out. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So, you know, one other important note that I would just like to mention is going back to brewing tea. I know a lot of people like to cold steep and they like to do sun tea. And just what I've found is a lot of the herbs and stuff out there, not all companies treat their teas, and so there'll be microbes in them. So I would always recommend brewing your tea hot and not making a sun tea or not, you know, cold steeping it, especially if you have herbs in there, because you just never know. You know, what could be lurking, you know, in those herbs that could get you sick. So it's always smart, and we always recommend people to always hot steep their tea. So,
and that's a great way to end our time. Thank you so much for being with me, Chris. I learned so much about tea that I didn't know. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. And if you enjoyed this show, tell your friends.